Okay, we're up to Divrei Yom Aleph, Perek Hey, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Yesterday we concluded with discussing the significance and why Yehoshua is called Shaul. Okay, that was our topic yesterday. And now we pretty much finished with the Shevet of Reuven. Right, so we've gone to Yehuda, Shimon, and Reuven, and we've explained the Yichus of Reuven, all of the important people. And we mentioned the Molchama, that the children of Yehuda, they expanded their boundary, they continued all the way out into the east, along the Hakras, the Euphrates, and they waged war against this nation called Hagar, the Hagriim. The Hagriim refers to the children of Hagar, Yishmael, and that's how Rashi learned this. Now after we conclude with Reuven, now we go to God. What? Oh, so that's a very good point you made. I don't remember where I saw this. I will submit all the different things that I tried to use to prepare. It's probably the art school commentary that it's not the same nation. The Hagarin is not the same nation as the Hagriim, because we're going to see soon in a few psukim they were completely wiped out off the face of the earth. This nation. They were decimated. So it cannot be that the Hagrim, that could be not, there are different opinions, but I don't remember the exact source, but there are different, this Hagrim, that's the famous Mizma with a Pegimel we say for all of Rahman Lutzlam Tsaris going on Eretz Yisrael, and the nation of Yehagriim, which is a different nation. Okay, let's now after we conclude with Reuven, we go to God. We know that there were three nations on the east of the Yarden. There was three Shvatim, Reuven, God, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. So now we go to their next door neighbor, God, Reuvenei God, who lineged them, who was right opposite them, Yashub Yeretz HaBashan. They lived in the land of Bashan ad Salka. Now Bashan does not Pasuk Yud Aleph. Perek A Pasuk Yud Aleph, they lived in Bashan at Salka. Let's see right away Rashi, right away the Mitzudas and Rashi, because that's problematic. Salka is not really the property, Bashan is not really the property of God. Let's see Yud Aleph. In the Mitzudas there is no Yud Aleph. Let's see Rashi, is there Rashi Yud Aleph, Negel Lenegdam, Yoshu Etzlam, Kamoy the Ilcha Lenegdecha. Okay, let me go. Many of you have the Radak, I believe, right? You have the edition. And there, I believe, is where it explains this idea. Pasuk Perik Hey, let me just find the right place. Pasuk Yud Dalid. Radak is a fantastic commentator. Should have done more Radaks in the past. Some things here are very, very technical in this particular sefer. There's one thing I want to read you about the Radak coming up soon, which is fascinating. You'll see what I mean. Pasuk Yud Aleph Negad. Okay, so Einoy Omer B'chol Eretz Abashan. So the Radak here, Pasuk Yud Aleph, says it cannot possibly mean that God lived in the that God lived in the entire Bashan. Shrei Omar B'Toriki Eretz Abashan Nidna L'Moshe L'Chatzis Shem Menashe. Okay, these are basic contradictions. If you are a baki in Chumash, which we all should be, so then like we had yesterday, Aroer. Aroer is the wrong Shevet. So again, you have another very great difficulty because Bashan was given to Chatzis Shevet Menashe. K'moshe Omer v'yeser ha-gilod v'chol ha-bashan mamleches og nasati l'chatzis Shevet ha-menashe. So what is going on? So again, he comes along, the Radak comes along and says, Elam miksas ha-bashan ha-yilavnei gonat salka, part of Bashan, umisilka v'elich kol ha-bashan ha-yilachatzis Shevet ha-menashe. So part of Bashan was l'god until Salka, and then from Salka the Elech, including the remainder. So when the Torah says that God, Bashan, it doesn't mean the entire Bashan, it means everything which God did not take. Okay, that's a little bit of a difficulty. The part of Bashan that belonged to Og, and the whole chevel ha'argo sheniko eretz harifoyim aval hoyim mixas mikoymos abavashon shlo hoyim moil chaleim oiga v'afil wachi v'afal pi shohoyim niko melech abashon lefi shoroyv abashon hoyim lo mixas min abashon atzalka hoyim lemor lesa hoyim levnei god or ma'ashem gam kein heino yosh b'gilo abavashon v'nosech v'yos abashon shohu atzalka. So basically it does not mean the entire thing. Okay, that's one interpretation. Another interpretation I saw is that we're dealing with two very different periods of time. When the Torah says that God was given to, that Bashan was given to God, that was originally at the time when Yoshua came into the land. But here we're describing the families at a much later point in time. In fact, we're going to see that we're going to be dealing with the time of Yosan. The census that's going to be made is a much later point in time, and a lot of things happened, transpired between the time of the original kibush and what came about at a later point in time. So in Hanami, there's a discrepancy because over time things change. Okay, so back to Pasuk Yud Beis. Now, after we know that God lived in the land of Bashan, we now learn about all of the people, all of the famous people of Shevet God. We have Yoel Horoish. That was a very popular name. Yoel appears in many different Shvatim. V'Shafam HaMishneh. Shafam was the second in charge. V'Yanai V'Shafat BaBashan. And these two people, they lived in Bashan. The Targum says these two people were Shoiftim. They were judges. Look at them. Targum Yoel Reish Sanhedrin. Targum does this a lot. He takes a lot of the people mentioned in these psukim and he says that they were leaders in Torah. Yoel was the Reish Sanhedrin. V'Shafam was Rav Beis Ulfana. He was the Rosh HaYeshiva. The Ya'anai V'Shafat Dayone B'Masnan were judges in B'Masnan. I guess that's the name for Bashan. There's also a tradition that Shafat was the father of Elisha. Okay, the famous Elisha, which brought back life to the Ben Hashunamis, the student of Eliyahu, this is his father. His father was Shafat. So, okay, these are famous people, the Rosh Sanhedrin, the Mishnah is the Rosh HaYeshiva, and judges in the land of Bashan, including the father of Elisha. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Now, by the way, God, from all of the Shvatim, that the Mefarshim explain, we don't really know the details, the yichus, the lineage, it's been lost from us. We are certain that there once upon a time was a Sefer HaYuchsin, there was Divrei Hayamim L'Malchei Yisrael, as we discussed yesterday. But even though that book has been lost from us, if we look carefully in Tanakh, we're able to find different sections where we have yichus of different Shvatim. God, we really don't know much about them. All we know, we have a couple of names. And we don't know how Yoel is traced back to God Himself. We do not know, because when it came to Reuven, we went through the basic children. Reuven had four children. We had Carmi, and then we went down. Okay, there are definitely some missing links, but we have a basic structure of his generous children and some general pattern structure of how they came about. And when we come to Levi have a very detailed list, a very detailed family tree, but not when it comes to God, and that's because it has been lost from us. We just have here a couple of names. Pasuk Yud Gimel, V'Acheihem, who were the distinguished brothers. We're now going to have a list of seven distinguished members. V'Acheihem, Lebeis Avoseihem, and their brethren. Some learn that this brother is simply that other distinguished members of the family, who were they? Michael, number one, Umishulam, number two, Visheva, number three, Viarai, four, Viakon, five, Viziah, six, Voever is seven. Shiva for a grand total of seven people. We have in the Gemara the Shiva Toivei Ho'ir. If you want to do something really serious in the community, you want to sell the shul, you want to sell the town square, you have to consult with the Shiva Toivei Ho'ir. There are seven people in traditional time Chazal. That's the way the structure, the way the system was set up. Yeah? What?
When Boyish wanted to go out,
he took 10 people because you need a minion. You need a minion. That's a separate thing. We're talking about people who are in charge of the community. The Gemara mentions this concept. It appears to be an ancient concept which comes from time of Tanakh, that in a city there is a requirement that there be seven representatives. if you have to have seven appointed leaders, whether they're elected or whether they just rise to power on their own, it's not clear. It's a democracy. Is it some type of called Olam Gvar? I do not know. But there are seven people which represent the community, and they make the decisions on behalf of the community. And Chazal point to this part. Okay, we go back even in ancient times, time of God, which here we're dealing with the time of the Bais Rishon, even before that time of Shaul, maybe even before the time of Yeshua. We have seven distinguished people, and these are the Shiva, Toivei, Ho'ir, a very early source for this concept. Pasuk Yudalet, Ela, all of these people, the seven people listed, are Bnei Avichayil ben Huri ben Yeroach ben Gilad ben Michael ben Yeshishai ben Yachdo ben Buz. Okay, it's a long, long Yichus brief. The seven distinguished people that we mentioned in Pasuk Yigimel are all children of this person that starts with Avichayil. He was obviously a very great person. Then it says, who is Avichayil? He was Achi. Achi simply is going back on Avichayil. He was the brother of Ben Avdil, Ben Guni, who was the Rosh, the Beis Avosam, who was the Rosh of the Beis Avdil. Who is the Achi? Again, I told you soon that Achi refers to going back on Avichayil, but it could be Achi also goes back on Ben Buzi. Ben Buzi was the brother of Avdil ben Guni beRosh Toveis Avosam. It's not clear. There are different interpretations of exactly who's who and how you trace the, you connect Pasuk Yudalit to Pasuk Tesvav. We do know that all the seven people listening to Gimel are all children of Avichayil, and Pasuk Tesvav, we have a new person who's a brother. Is that a brother of Avichayil or a brother of the last person mentioned, Buz? Now we go further. Let's read.
Is that all Shevet Shoyt, by the way?
No. This is a very small section. A teeny Shevet Goat had 1,000 people. It's 1,000 people in Shevet Goat. We don't know the exact number, whatever the number was, but these were just the most distinguished leaders that Ezra felt was important to record in Divrei Hayamim. Obviously, there were many more. These were, he's only listing very distinguished members of the family. Yeah.
No, my question is not that. It's the relationship between the two families, Be'er Yarden, and the six that are Eretz Yisrael.
No, that's Menashe. This is God. God, the entire Shevet God was on the east side. Okay, let's see the Mitzudos in Pasuk Yud Beis from 2 through Tes. Through Pasuk Tes Vav. Mitzudos, David. If there is, I'm a little bit okay. It's Sudos. I'm a little bit confused in this print. Here it is. Okay. Pasuk Yud Gimel, right? Or Yud Beis Baboshin. Ela Harba. How you Roshin Baboshin? These four mentioned in Pasuk. These four mentioned in Pasuk are Yud Beis Yoel Shafam Yanai Shafat. Those four people. These were leaders in Basha. Pasuk Yud Gimel, V'achehem, Miyudoehem, the ones that were well known, V'ureehem, their friends, Shayu Roshim, L'Beis Avoseim, Hayu Michal, were the following seven. Pasuk Tesvav, Rosh, Hayu Rosh, L'Beis Avosam, Shel Hanosh, Mashaimo, he was the leader. Pasuk Yud Gimel, we're in Pasuk Tesvav, where it says Achi ben Avdiel, he was the leader of the entire family. All of the other people mentioned traced their lineage back to him. Okay, let's see Rashi. Rashi Pasik Yud Gimel Va'achehem Lebeis Avosem B'Makom Yichusim, where they lived. Okay, he's not saying Mishol Michol Mishulam Elu Hayu Rosh Avosem Shal Osa Hayachas Ki Kulam Hisyachasu Bimei Yosam. Okay, now he's referring to what it says in the next Pasik, which we'll leave for one moment. Let's go to the next Pasik. Pasuk Yud Tes Zayin. Vayeshvu Bagilad Baboshan. The entire Shevet Menashe dwelt in Gilad. Okay? Gilad Eliyohanavi comes from Gilad. Eliyohanavi is from Giladi. Baboshan. Some learn that Eliyohanavi, the different, we have different opinions exactly which. There are different opinions. One opinion is because Shevet God. One opinion that Eliyonavi came from Shevet God because he's called the Giladi, and Gilad is the portion of Shevet God. There are different Mamari Chazal which conflict exactly where he came from. It could be that he had a mixed marriage, that his parents, different parts of his family, his lineage come back from different Shvatim. They had a little bit of everyone in him, but he definitely, to some degree, he is from God because over here, they lived in Gilad, and that was a place of Eliyonavi. It fits very well then with Elisha, because Elisha was his Talmud. He just picked up a talmud from another shevet. He picked up a talmud from his own kind. They were similar because they had the same background, and they both came from Gilad. Either they lived in Gilad, or they actually were descendants of people of shevet Gad. Pasuk Tezayin, Vayeshu Agilad Baboshan. They lived in Gilad in the Boshan. Boshan is the larger area. That is the region. Gilad is a specific city or a smaller region in Boshan. Uvivnoi Secha and its suburbs. Uvichol migrashei Sharon, all of the open lands. A migrash is an open land which surrounds the city of Sharon. Sharon is the name of a place which seemingly is connected and associated with Gilad and Bashan. We have three different names: Gilad, Bashan, and Sharon. Atotze Osam, to their extreme outer limits. Like we have this word in Parshas Maaseh, the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, V'hayu totze osav hayama, and then we give basic general description of the land, of the gvulos of Eretz Yisrael, V'hayu totze osav hayama, and then it extends, it's yotzei. Totze osav means it goes out, and it continues to extend and stretch all the way to a certain boundary, and that's what it means over here, is that they live until Ad Totz Osaf. Pasuk Yitzayim, this is an important Pasuk, Kulam, all of the people that we've mentioned above, starting with Pasuk Yud Aleph, going down through all the names that we have over here, and what happened, where they lived, Kulam His Yachsu Bimei, they all were counted. A census was made in the days of Yosam Melech Yehuda, Uvimei Yeravam Melech Yisrael. We know that the Malchus of Klai Yisrael was divided between the 10 Shvatim and the 2 Shvatim. The 10 Shvatim was a rebellion. It was an illegal break-off, and each one had their own set of kings. And every time we mention a period in the history of Klal Yisrael, we always like to mention who was at that time the king of Yehuda and the king of Yisrael of the 10 Shvatim. So the king of the 10 Shvatim at that point in time, it says, was Yeravam Melech Yisrael. This is the Yeravam the second, not to be confused with Yeravam ben Nevat. Yeravam ben Nevat was the king who broke off. He was the one that split away from Rechavam. Rechavam was Shlomo HaMelech's son. He was the king of Yehuda. And Yeravam ben Nevat, he took with him 10 Shvatim, and he splintered Klal Yisrael into two parts. That was Yeravam ben Nevat. That was the first Yeravam. Then you go down a whole series of kings, a couple of kings, until you come to another Yeravam, which was probably 100 years later, something along the line like that. And that's the Yeravam that we are referring to, Yeravam the second. So he ruled over the 10 Shvatim, and who was his counterpart among the Malchus of Yehuda? It was Yosef. Now let me just give you some background, because all of the Mepharshim, everyone here across the board, it says it's not true. Take out a chart. In fact, I wanted to print out, but I couldn't find my safer. I misplaced it. But take out a chart, and you go through the kings, and you will discover that they were not contemporaries. Yosef was much later than Yeravam the second. So what in the world is going on over here? Every time you want to go give an event occurred during a specific point in Klal Yisrael history, you want to tell us who the king of Yehuda and the king of Yisrael was, you got to tell me the right kings. These two kings did not live at the same time. So there are two answers. Answer number one is, it's not like today, where if you want to take a census, we have such technology, if we wanted to, we could take a census in one day. Okay, they don't do that, obviously. When they take a census in the United States every 10 years, it takes, how long does it take? It takes 6 months, right? There's a whole process. You send in the forms, they mail it to you, you have to fill it out, you don't send it back, they have people who work for the government, they call you up, come down, so on and so forth. Okay, so if you work 9 to 5, and you don't work on holidays, and you want to work slow, government job, it'll take 6 months to do the census. But if you really want to get it going, we have the technology today, we can do a census in one day. And they say, Eretz Yisrael, they say, I read an article recently that every country in the world has a census. Every country in the world has to know what's going on in the country. The one that does it the best, the most accurate, with the great, best technology is Israel. Israel, that's what...
What? Well, they're not that large a country, but... Do they do a statistical
everything? I don't know the details.
They do, but they count.
But whatever they do, it's done. It's done with much more seriousness than any other country in the world. So that comes back from our history, going back from these people. There was a census taken, but what's interesting is the census took decades to complete. They started the census during the time of Yosan, the king of Yehuda, and they finished it decades later at the time they started during Yeravam, the king of Yisrael, and they finished it decades later at the time of Yosam, the king of Yehuda. It's in just a way of saying we could have expressed the time period of how long it took in many, many ways, but it's a clever way of telling us that it took a very, very long time. It started during Yeravam. It took 50 years until they finally finished counting everyone they needed to count.
Administrations later.
Right, exactly. But not only administrations later, we're spanning different kingdoms. We're going from the Malchus of Yehuda to the Malchus of Yisrael. It's also very curious, difficult, why we even take into consideration the Malchus of Yehuda. Because the Shevet Gad was under the jurisdiction of the Malchus of Yisrael. So what do we even care? They were not speaking terms. In fact, most of the time, they were at war with each other. There were periods where they joined together. They had joint ventures. But they were at war with each other most of the time. So it's not likely they really were concerned with how many people the other Malchus had to work on a joint effort and taking a census. So that's also a very difficult question. Who cares? Why do we want to bring the two together? Okay, but so there must be more to the story. Another answer, which we're going to see in the Mesudas and Rashi and the Radak, elaborates in much more detail, is who was the king before Yosam? Uzziyahu. What happened? Uzziah was a very great tzaddik, but what happened to him? He decided to bring Ketor, he was not a kohen. A melech is from Shevet Yehuda. Shevet Yehuda, you don't go into the Heichel to bring Ketores. He decided, I want to also bring the Ketores. So, and that was totally out of line. Mm-hmm. Okay, what was his cheshbon? Whatever his cheshbon was, we do not know. We cannot be omit on their nisyonos. He came into the Heichel to bring Ketores, and what happened? Hashem was furious, and Saras broke forth on his forehead, on his body, and he had to live in quarantine for the remainder of his life. And he lived a long time. He lived, I think, for 50, his Malchus was for 52 years, if I'm not mistaken. We'll see the numbers in a few moments, perhaps, in the Radak. He really lived a long time. But the good part of his life, he lived in isolation. So technically, he had the title of king, but he gave over the power, executive power, to run Klal Yisrael, to run Yehuda, to his son Yosam. So even though, so that's why it mentions over here Yosam was living at the same time, Yosam was running the Malchus at the same time as Yeravam was alive. Yosam did not have title of king until many, many years later. Three kings already died from the Malchus. Yeravam died, and another king died. They outlived, Uzziyahu himself outlived many kings from the Malchus of Yisrael. But Uzziyahu was not running the Malchus. Uzziyahu was, again, in isolation. It's quarantine because of the Tzaras. He had the title of Malchus. But the one that ran the Malchus on a daily basis was Yosam. So therefore, we match up the administration of Yosam to Yerub, because they indeed did work together. They were contemporaries. Yeravam was Mamish the Melech at that point in time, and Yosam was the executive director. He was not the CEO. He was not the president or the chairman of the board, whichever title you want to give, the king, whatever. But Yosam was the executive director, so we match up the one that was running the business to the one of this counterpart, the Malchus of Yisrael, who was also running the affairs of the state, which also happened to be the king. That is the second and much more popular approach to explain this very difficult pasuk of these two kings. Okay, let's see over here. Kula Mesach B'mei Yosam Pasuk Yitzayin Melech Yehuda B'mei Yeravam Ben Melech Yisrael. Now let's go take a look at the Rash, the Mitzudos, and the Rashi, maybe a little bit of the Radak, to get a much better appreciation of this Pasuk. Pasuk Yud Zayin in the Mitzudos. His Yachasu, Choku Lodas, What does Minas Yachasu in this context? And the Tzidut says they made an investigation. Seder told Osam, Mime Yosam. So that's what it wasn't just a census. According to the Mitzudos, it was much more complex than the census. It was a family tree. Can you imagine today if the United States government will come to Yadur and they'll say, not only do we want to know how many people live in your home, we want to know how everyone is related, and we want to know your grandparents, your great grandparents, just tell us how far back we can go, and we'll have a massive computer system, and we'll put everything together. Well, people do it voluntarily. They have all these websites. There are websites. There are a lot of websites. Unfortunately, the websites don't work together. They don't. There are some very big ones, but they don't pool work together. It's a big thing by the guns. Big people are very curious to know where they come from. You can pay a lot of money to do research. It's people are very today. The goyim are fascinated. It's Mr. Haskell for us. Why we are not so fascinated? I mean, some of us are to know exactly to try the technology is there. You know, to do the best that we can to trace our lineage. But Chaku Lodas Seidu told Osam Bime Yosam, who is Yosam? So here the Mitzudas comes along and it says this idea. Kishahoya Shoifet, when he was the Shoifet, notice he calls him a Shoifet and he doesn't call him the king, he was a Shoifet, Me'es Shenisnaga Uzia. When his king, his father, Uzziah was the father of Yosam, Aviv, Avaloi Molach Vimeira, but he did not actually serve as king in the lifetime of Yerovam II. Ki imli achar moso kimasha omar b'molochim beis. Okay, so that's Rashi. Okay. We'll see this in a few words. Very mekatzer, but he really says it well. He says it well. He explains that they were not contemporaries as far as kings, but they were contemporaries as far as running the affairs of the state, respectively, one Malchus Yisrael and one Malchus Yehuda. Let's look at Rashi. Rashi pasuk Yud Zayin. That was the Rashi Pasuk Yud Gimel. See, Rashi already included this in Pasuk Yud Gimel. Let's go back to Pasuk Gimel and Rashi. Michal v'Avshalom elu hayu Rashi avosem shol es hayachas ki kulam es hayachas su bimei Yosam. They all traced their lineage during the days of Yosam Melech Yehuda uvimei Yeravam Melech Yisrael. So Rashi just doesn't really avoids the entire thing. Okay, I'm curious, what does it say over here in the Targum? I didn't get a chance to look at the Targum. Interesting, the Targum says the Melech Shifta the Beis Yehuda v'yomei Yerav doesn't call Malkod Yisrael. Okay, the Targum does say the word Melech, does not say the word, does not, it calls them both kings. Okay, let's look at the Radak. We're not going to do all the Radaks, do not worry. But this Radak over here, it's good because it says over some of the numbers. It gives you a nice review of Sefer Melachim, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Okay, Pasuk Yud Zayin, Kulam Hisyach, in the Radak, Kulam Hisyach, so be me Yosef Melch Yehuda, me Yerav Melch Yisrael, perish, kol Eilu B'nei Ruvain, B'nei God, B'chad Shev Menashe, these three Shvatim, ki three Shvatim, Hisyachasu la Melchom Hazo Sha'asu, im Hahagriim, Kulaymar, So the Radak is coming to tell us something very interesting. He's saying, not like what the Mitzvahs, the purpose of this Yichus was in preparation for war. And that's the next few Psukim, which we'll go into in a few moments. The next few Psukim we're going to learn is the three Shvatim on the other side of the Yarden, Ruvain, God, and Chatz Yishev and Menashe, they went to war against the Bnei Yishmael, who were called the Hahag Re'im. They went to war. Before you go to war, this is a whole new concept, you want to trace your lineage. You want to know exactly on whose side you're, where you come from. Now, why is that so? It's not clear. It could be that if it's a religious war, we know that in wars in the Torah, you have the Meshuach Muhammad. The Meshuach Muhammad gets up and says, Mirish, and then Mirish Hayore Virach Halevov Yelech Vyoshav Leveso. What does it mean, Yore Virach Halevov? You're afraid of the Averos Shebiyado. So what do we learn from this parsha, this Kiseitse? Kiseitse Muhammad Shoftim? Shoftim? And Shoftim. So what do we learn from this parsha? when you go to war, you need zechusin. War is not just I'm going to war. Whoever has the latest technology wins the war. That's not the way war works for Klal Yisrael. The Klal Yisrael war, it's a spiritual war. Every war you need zechusin. It's a spiritual war. What are the zechusin that you need to come onto in war? Your yichus. Zechus avos. Powerful concept. When you go to war, you're going out to war with the zechus avos. Your father, your grandfather, your great-grandfather, well, that's what you bring to the table. It's not the Iron Dome. It's not the latest machine gun. It's not the latest satellites, drones. You bring to war the zechus avos. So before you go to war, you got to know your zechus avos. You got to know who's who. You got to trace your lineage. Very powerful concept. That's how the Radak is learning from the Pasuk. Because you could learn according to Rashi, according to the Mesudos. No, there's nothing to do with war. It's just, this is Sefer Divrei Hayam. We're tracing lineage. We're tracing different people. So we mentioned we're tracing. Here, he adds a whole new parish. You're going to war, you got to know your zuchusim, and therefore they're tracing their lineage. V'zehoya b'imei, this all took place during the days of Yoisa Melech Yehudov, Me'yirav Melech Yisrael. Now, he comes to explain over here this very important Radak. Okay, let's continue the Radak. He really lays out a lot of very important principles. First of all, if you take this pasuk literally, you can get very confused. Maybe we are referring to Yeravam ben Nevat. We're referring to Yeravam, the one that divided the Malchus, the first Yeravam. So it doesn't make any sense. We're talking about Yeravam versus Yosam. We're dealing over here, totally different generations. There's no connection. So right away, he says, who Yeravam ben Yoash, Bibnei Yehuda. We're dealing over here from Yeravam ben Yoash, Bibnei Yehuda. We're not dealing with Yeravam. That's the second Yeravam. We're not dealing with we're dealing with a different Yeravam, a Yeravam ben Yoash, who comes from Bnei Yehuda, even though he's not part of Yehuda now, he's leading the Malchus of Yisrael. It's Yeravam the second. Okay, now, then he goes further. If you're going to study Sefer Melachim, when you study the charts, you will discover they don't correspond. They're not counterparts. Shara Yeravam Molach Arboim the Achashana. Yeravam ruled for 41 years. Ubishnas Eshem Sheva, and in the 27th year, Yeravam Molach Azarya. He was already 27 years into his Malchus, which would only last for 41 years. And at that period of time, who became the king, his counterpart in Yehuda? Azarya. And Azariah was king for how many years? Molach Azariah ben Amatziah, Melech Yehuda, who Uziah. Azariah is also known as Uziah. Molach Azariah chamishim ushtayim shana. So Azariah outlived Yeravam by many years. Not only that, Yeravam's successors had very short lives. So he outlived a couple of kings. Hine Azariah Melech Yehuda, Molach, ruled acharei mos Yeravam Melech Yisrael shloishim ushmoyne shana, 38 years. V'yafal pishesh adaktik v'chashbonas elu k'moshanu asid nach. This is what I wanted to bring. This is one of the reasons I wanted to read this to you. Okay, this is a very interesting insight into studying Tanakh. This is the Radak. And the Radak is mamish, you know, Rav David Kimchi. He's one of the major league commentators of Nevi'im. His parish is beautiful. It's full of medrash. It's full of very deep insights. It's a favorite. Anyone who learns Tanakh, this is a favorite. The Radak. And what does he say? He says, he's explaining a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. Now let me ask you, when you go to yeshiva, what do you learn? Yeah, you learn Yeshua. Then you teach Yeshiftim. Then you go, oh, they teach Melachim. A lot of violence. Some people don't like to teach Melachim. Chassidim. I know that's what the Chassidish guy says. By us, we don't teach Melachim. We don't teach, because Melachim, it's all about Avodah Zarah. It's all about violence. It's violence, Avodah Zarah. What do you have to teach Kindalach about violence, killing each other, and teach them about Avodah Zarah, Avodah Zarah, Avodah Zarah? What do you have to put the... not the same degree. Yeshua Shoft, in the current, the major theme is you have to do tshuva. You have, because if you rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's going to punish you. That fits very well with Chinuch. If you do this, you're going to be punished. You're going to be punished. That's a recurring theme of Yeshua and Shoftim. The cycle of following in Hashem's ways, you'll get reward. You rebel, you'll be punished.
I'm just surprised they learned any of that.
No, so
he said, it's all Avodah Zarah. It's all violence, especially the violence. A woman once told me, she says she never really learned Tanakh until much later in life, and she always had complaints. The woman told us, she always had complaints against all the yeshivas, why they don't learn Tanakh. Not that she's the one to have complaints, because she herself never learned Tanakh. She never opened up a Tanakh her whole life anyway. So I didn't say that, but she was telling me. But then when I started doing like the Nachyomi, all these things, I saw what it says. It's the violence. The violence is just unbelievable. Now I really understand they're right, and I was shocked. This is like a modern woman. I was shocked she's saying this, and they shouldn't teach this to these little kids. They get older. But with little children, it's very dangerous. Okay. Okay, but in any event. That's not. When we do learn Tanakh, most people they learn Tanakh. They to some degree, you learn Yeshua, Shoftim, Melachim. Then when you get more advanced, you learn Yeshaya, maybe some Sinuvim Achronim, Divrei Hayamim. Who has time for this? Who's interested in Divrei Hayamim? This is an afterthought. It's not on the curriculum in any high school or in any even college level. You're a masmid, so you'll pick it up. It's not from known to be, given the exotic shir in Yeshaya. Yeshaya. Shreyasar. You learn the Chumash Megillos. Divrei Hayamim. So, Radak. Who is the Iker commentator? What did he learn first? What did he write his commentary on first? Divrei Hayamim. That's what he says here. Kmo she'onu asidim livo'er bimelachim. Like we will one day explain in Sefer Melachim. In other words, he wrote his parish on Divrei Hayamim first. And he's now telling us that we have a problem here, because in Divrei Hayamim it says here that which kings rule together, which were contemporaries, Yosam versus Yeravam. Problem is, in Sefer Melachim they were not contemporaries. And when I'll write my parish one day on Sefer Melachim, I'll explain in more detail. There are different difficulties in the calculation. I told you 52, I told you 37, I told you 41. Okay, the numbers are not exactly perfect. We'll figure out the numbers and when we'll get there, I'll elaborate. But it's a fascinating insight into the thinking, into the Seder Halimut of one of the majorly commentators, the Radak, of what you should learn first. You should first be a Baki in Divrei Hayamim before you become a Baki in Sefer Melachim. Interesting, right? Okay. Kamoish anu asidim. You can't deny what I'm telling you. It's correct. Asidim levo'er b'melachim. That's what it says. Mikol makom uziyah herich. So he explains here the answer to the question, as we already learned in the Mikol makom uziyah herich yam achar yiravam. Im kein eich molach yosam ben uziyah b'zman yiravam. That's the question. What's going on? We know as a fact that Uziyah outlived Yeravam by many years. Ela, the answer is Sheyosam ben Uziyah Molach. He did rule Bechaye Uziyah. He really was the king behind the scenes. Mishahaya Mitzoyro Uziyahu, because he was a Mitzoyro. Kemosh Nemar Vayinaga Hashem as Hamelech. Vayosam ben Hamelech. Vayosam ben Hamelech al Habayis, he took control. Shoyfet es am oretz v'yitachim lefarish v'mei Yosam v'mei Yeravam im kol echad bizmana v'im kol echad mehem v'siachasu l'mulchama. Okay, so that's one parish. There's another parish. V'yitachim lefarish v'mei Yosam v'mei Yeravam. There were two different censuses. Im kol echad bizmana v'im kol echad mehem v'siachasu l'mulchama. Then he gives another interpretation. And the other interpretation is there were two separate countings. There was a counting during the Tkufa of Yosam, And there was accounting before, much earlier, during the time of Yaron. So, Psach HaKol, I've given you three Perushim to explain Pasuk Yud Zayin. The census started at the time of Yeravam and took decades to complete. Number two, they were exactly the same time, but because Uzziah had Saras, the one that ruled during that period of time was Yosam, so we give him the credit. He's the one that implemented, he officiated over the census together with Yeravam. And the third interpretation is there were two separate countings in different periods of time. And also, it was interesting, they did participate. I mean, to some degree, if we're counting both of these leaders, at least according to the second interpretation, there was some participation. They came together, at least in the census. Okay, now let's go back to the war. According to the Radak, they all come together to make the census in preparation for the war. And what do they do at this point in time? Pasuk Yitches. B'nei Ruvain, now they take a census. B'nei Ruvain, the Godi, v'chatzi shevet Menashe, min b'nei Chayil. They were warriors. Anoshim, they were men, noisei, who carried mogain, shields, the cherif, swords, the dorche keshas. They knew how to step on a bow. Dorech means to draw the bow. Why is it called dorche keshas? I never understood this. I saw a documentary once on the Crusades. I told you this. And they showed it was a mystery. A certain battle, a critical battle between the Christians and the Muslims, nothing to do with the Jews. Between the Christians and the Muslims, there was a certain battle where one side, well, could be it was the Turks. Could be when they came into Turkey, I don't know. There was one battle where they didn't know how they were able to do something. I don't remember all the details. And they figured it out. They had a diary. And they figured out, and they actually reenacted. And they showed how they lied down on the floor, and they put their feet on their bow and arrow, and they used their feet in a very clever way to shoot arrows in a way that would otherwise be impossible with using your hand. And they did it, they coordinated together, but the point was they used...
You need a foot, you need your feet. You need to stretch it out.
Right.
That's only a string of bow.
Commentators simply understand this to mean that they were standing and they were using their feet. They were lying flat on their back. Okay, this is the way I remember it. They were lying flat on their back, and they used their feet. They held it with one their hand, and they used their feet, the full force of their feet, not standing and just taking with your feet, completely lying on your back. You're able to use the full force of your feet in order to draw the bowstring to shoot the arrow as far as possible in a certain position. That's why it's called Dorche. Dorche comes from the word Derech, the road, to step, to trot, to use your feet. They use, when you shoot a bow and arrow, not like log bone and a little kiss, you have to use your
professional
feet. Professional bow and arrow, when you use your feet, that's why it's called Dorche Keshas. Ulemudei Milchama, they all had degrees from West Point in warfare. They were trained in warfare. How many soldiers were people of Noisei Gbnechayil, Noisei Mogain, Cherev Dorche? It's a very elaborate description of they were Giborim. They were soldiers. This is the ultimate soldier, right? Our boy, I remember in the Iraq wars, the Persian Gulf War, they were talking, they interviewed one of these Iraqi citizens. And they watched the Americans come in with the tanks and their Humvees and the gear, and this little kid says, "Wow, I want to be an American soldier one day. I want to grow up. This is a soldier. This is the real deal. With the gear, the uniform, the gear, the weapons. This is a soldier. This is the real deal. They're trained." That's exactly what it says here. And b'nei chayel, noisei mogin, acherev, derechi keshes, l'mudi milchama. You know, it makes an impression on you. This is the real deal. This is how you have to be trained and behave. Yeah.
These are like the special units.
Yeah, special force, the Navy SEALs. The Navy SEALs.
Well,
like yeah. This is the real deal. How many? Arbo im via arbo elef, 44,000. Ushvameo, 700. Vishisham, 760. We have a very precise number. Yotzei Tzava, 44,760 went out to war. Now it appears there must have been. So the first thing, there must have been originally. We don't really find that these strange numbers. It must have been that when they recruited them for war, there was a round number of 45,000, and some of them went AWOL. Some of them dropped out. They dropped out, and that's why the remainder. They started out with a round number, 45,000, maybe 50,000, and after the training, not everyone can handle it. They dropped out. Exactly. They dropped out, or they ran away. They ran away. They went AWOL. So therefore, they were called. They were called over here. The remainder was 44,760 were left over. Pasuk Yitesh. What did these 44,760 soldiers do? Combination of force of B'nai, an alliance of Ruvain, God, and Chatshah, Vinasha, Vayasa Melchama im Hahagriin. They waged war against the Hahagriim, Hagar, Yishmaelim, and another three nations. We do not know who these nations are. They were called Vitor, Vinafish, Vinodaf, a total of four nations. Vaye Ozru Alehem, and they were helped.
These are the sons of Ishmael.
Oh, that's the Hahagriim. Yitur, Nafish, Vinodva.
Oh, yeah.
They're also the descendants of Ishmael. Are they sons of Ishmael of Hagar? Okay. Vayezru alayhem, and they were the Jewish people were assisted. This means Hashem came to their aid. Hashem answered their prayers. Vayinashu v'yadam, and Vayinashu v'yadam Hahagriim v'chol shimohem. And it was Vinost, it was given over, Nesina. It was delivered into their hands. Hahagriim v'chol she'imahem, and all of the nations that joined them, ki leloikim zo'aku ba'milchama, because they cried out to Hashem in war. Vanator lohem, Hashem answered their prayers. Ki v'tchuvo, they had faith in Hashem. Vayishmu, they captured Miknehem. Now this is a very interesting, amazing passage, what it says to the numbers. Gimalehem Chamisha Elef, 50,000 camels. What are you going to do with 50,000 camels? There are only 44,760 souls. So everyone got at least one camel, right? Everyone got at least one camel. Vitzon, sheep, Mosayim Chamisha Elef, 250,000. So make the math. How many sheep did each one get? Vachamayrim, Al Poyim. That's it. 2,000. That's it. Very few. Very few donkeys. There were not many donkeys. Doesn't talk about the horse. There were no horses in that part of the world at this time. And this horses came from Egypt, right? The horse. There were no horses in this part of the world. It's a very interesting point. This totally other side of the world, by the way. Egypt is all the way. Is all the way west. Here we're all the way east. Okay, this is not Eretz Yisrael. They brought horse to Eretz Yisrael, but that's not so far from Egypt. If you go down from the south, the southwest. Here we're going all the way east into Iraq. That's really where we're going. We're going past Jordan to Iraq. The Nefesh Adam. How many people? Now this is astonishing. This is astonishing. Meya Aleph, 100,000. Wait a minute. Wait a minute, 100,000 prisoners, but they're only 44. Why didn't they fight back? They went like sheep.
Doesn't mean anything.
They went. How is it that 44,760 were able to take prisoners? 100,000. Those are the prisoners. Can you imagine the casualties? Can you imagine the people who fled, who ran away, and the numbers that were killed? What?
Kol ha'nidof.
Yeah, that's echad yirdoif. One will pursue 1,000. But this, the bracha was fulfilled over here. Here, prisoners. They're able to take prisoners. Why? Because Milchama is not... Milchama comes from Hashem. Ki chalolim rabim naflu. Many people died. Ki mehu elokim ha-milchama. This is already the third time it says this. This is very interesting. Pasuk Chof says, vayi'ozru aleihem. Now that simply means that Hashem helped them. All the Farshim want to learn. Let me just take a step back. In Pasuk Chof, where it says that they were helped. So some commentators learn it means that when they went to war, they were overwhelmed. 44,000 against who knows how many. So the Bnei Yisrael on the west side of the Yarden came to help them. It was here, who's going to war? Reuven, Gad, Chatzi Shevet, Menashe. They can muster 45,000 people, roughly, approximately. They go to war. They send back a call, SOS. We're in a lot of trouble. We're outnumbered. Send in the reserves. So Vayi'ozru l'chem in Pasuk Chaf does not necessarily mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu helped them, because that the Pasuk tells us later in Pasuk Chaf Avim Chaf Pasuk Chaf Beis. But Vayi'ozru means they were assisted by their brothers, Bnei Yisrael, on the west side of the Yarden. That is one approach. And that takes away some of the difficulty in how they were able to overcome such enormous numbers. But it's not necessarily difficult, because we know the bracha. Echad, yirdoif, elef, one can pursue 1,000. Okay, but if we were to go to Pasuk Chof to mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu helped them, then that means that already 3 times, it's a lot of repetition, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is assisting these people in the battle. Pasuk Chof Beis, ki chalolim radim naflu, ki milukim ha-mulchama, vayishu tachteim ala ad ha-gola, and they lived in their place until the place called Gola. Gola is the, now it's the name of a place. Where is Gola? Bavel is the Gola, right? That's wow. where we went into Golas. Bavel, Babylon. But Gola is the exile, literally. Obviously, this is a place. I don't think we know where this place is. But if you want to be a little midrashic, you want to be a little bit homiletic, Gola means until the place where the Jews would eventually find the exile, which is Bavel, which means they conquered the entire Iraq. And parts of Iran. Well, I shouldn't say entire Iraq. Iraq is where Babel is. That's where Babel. So that's where they actually went. They actually conquered the entire Iraq. That's exactly what it's going to be.
How about
them?
Were the Jews or the Goyim?
No, the Goyim. The Goyim, the Arabs, these 4 nations. Now, I want to point out that this Milchama mentioned over here, starting with Pasuk Yud Ches through Pasuk Chaf Beis, is the same Milchama that we learned in Pasuk Yud. That's how most of the commentators learn. Pasuk, go back to Pasuk Yud, it says, V'nei Shaul, Asu Milchama im Hahagri'im, Vayiblu Biyadam, Vayeshu Bi'ohaleim, Al Kol Pnei Mizrach La'Gilad. There we were discussing Shevet Ruvain. Right, we were discussing all of the descendants of Reuven. So we just also mentioned, incidentally, that Reuven also participated in this war. Now, in Pasuk Yud Ches, Pasuk Chabez, we are elaborating. We're dealing with the same war. We're elaborating. It wasn't just a Hahagri'in. It was also Yitur Nafish and this third nation that participated, Vinodov. And we're giving over some more details of the numbers of people, and Hashem helped them, and they expanded further. However, not everyone agrees. Some learn that Pasuk Yud is not the same war. There were 2 different wars. There was a war that took place during the time of Shaul, which we learned yesterday to mean during the time of Yehoshua. That was a much earlier battle. And then there was a later battle, a much later battle, which took place much later during the time of the census, which was during the time of Yosam and Yeravam II, which is hundreds of years later, a whole different battle. And or you want to, because that's the census. I mean, that's the question. The question is, what is the census doing here in the middle? The census took place after the battle, the census took place before the battle. These are all part of the big questions. You can learn very simply that it's 2 different battles. The battle during the time of Yeshua, then 100 years later, 200 years later, in this March, it's during the time of 400-500 years later, there was a census, they went to battle, there was a major war, and they finally wiped out the Hagri'im with Yitur Nafish and Nodav to finish them off in battle. Okay, let's just see if we can do this very quickly, or otherwise we'll leave it tomorrow. You know what, maybe we'll leave the Mitzudos and the Rashi for tomorrow. We'll do it tomorrow.